Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
You know, it's been said, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. And so studying the history is real important. And, you know, we love to study the gridiron history, not only to try to prevent mistakes, but just because it's fascinating and exciting and sometimes a lot more fun than even the current modern day news in football. And we have a gentleman who joins us each Tuesday, Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com, that digs deep and dusts off the playbooks to find these exciting pieces of history. And he's joining us again this week. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Derek. Look, glad to be here, and hopefully we can take this episode over the line.
Over the line. Well, I think we go over the line quite a bit when we get together, that's for sure. you have a great story that I guess it's one of those things that probably maybe we think of in the back of our heads, but never really comes to the front of our thoughts. And that's the title of it is The First Touchdown Pass Caught in the End Zone. You know, this is a pretty big moment in football history. And what can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So this play came as a result of rule changes in 1912. And they made a number of changes to lessen the restrictions on the forward pass. So one of them was that they allowed passes to be thrown more than 20 yards downfield. That had been a rule that was in place for about 2 or 3 years. They also created end zones behind the goal lines. Those didn't exist prior to 1912. And in creating the end zones, they allowed passes to be thrown and caught across the goal line. If a pass tumbled over the goal line, or if it fell incomplete across the goal line, it was still a touchback, just as any pass in the past, or prior to 1912, any pass over the goal line had been a touchback. Just kind of the way I think, I sometimes go, okay, well, they created this thing in 1912. So what was the first game where somebody threw a forward pass and caught it on the, in the end zone? So then it's like, okay, well, how do you find that? Well, I had previously uncovered what I believe is the first forward pass caught in a regular season game. So it wasn't traditionally the story was it was St. Louis U and Carroll in Wisconsin where that pass occurred. But I ended up finding that the first forward pass actually occurred several days earlier, and it was UNH, University of New Hampshire, throwing an incomplete pass against Maine, at Maine. So basically I did the same thing, I basically went to like late August, early September not even August because they never played games then, but I looked as early as I could in the 1912 season to try to find the first games. And just as it happened in 1906 when the first forward pass was thrown, a lot of the earliest games were Northeastern games, and especially like Northern New England, because I guess it snows there, and so they start the football season a little bit earlier, just like the Canadians, just to avoid some bad weather at the end of the season. Or at least, that's my assumption, because they did it for quite some time. So anyways, right away when I was looking, I found this little thing that showed, here's the five games this weekend. And the score, the results. So Norwich played UNH, scoreless tie, so no touchdown pass in that game. Bates played Maine Central Institute. Bates blew them out Maine Central Institute was actually like a prep school. But it said, you know, Bates played straight football, meaning they didn't throw the ball, and, you know, walloped them. Then Rhode Island, UMass, only one score. Rhode Island scored on a running play. Carlisle, Albright. And again, not a lot of information, but the, you know, the game description said that Carlisle played straight or did not resort to trick plays. You know, back then passing, you know, might have been considered a trick play. So then we're left with Maine versus Fort McKinley. And the story, the newspaper story said, one touchdown was made under the new rules on a forward pass across the goal line, comma, Bernheisel to Donahue. So when you look at the box score, it turns out that Bernheisel was the right end and Donahue was the left end. So the first touchdown pass caught in the end zone came on an end around pass play, you know, which wasn't uncommon then. You know, I know Chicago had a left-handed right end, and so they do end around pass plays, you know, with the guy, you know, and that was a couple of years earlier. But anyways, so one of the other things, you know, I wrote the story and didn't really think anything further about it. But James Gilbert, who reads the blog, and he and I have co-written some things. He's got his own blog about, you know, field, the history of different fields, and then also North Carolina because he's an alum there. He pointed out that it means that the first forward pass and the first forward pass caught in the end zone both occurred at Maine. So, you know, it's just one of those strange little coincidences. But, right, you know, it's really, maybe it's not as much a coincidence because they started their season earlier than everybody else, right? So they kind of had the opportunity, but still, it's kind of, you know, just interesting that the same field is where both of those occurred.
Yeah, well, you got a forward-thinking coach up there, you know. It was the same coach that the
coach you know, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It might have been one of those innovators that doesn't get enough credit. Maybe we'll have to know who that is maybe someday in future
episodes. Same coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, my guess is the answer is no, but
probably not. But you know, pretty progressive up there in New England. Yeah. So always thinkers. That's, you know, the hotbed of where football started. So maybe
that's right. That's
part
right.
of the innovation.
You know, and you get guys like, what's his name? You know, Brian Kelly, you know, he was up in that area, you know.
Right.
So right. UNH and tossing the P around.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, good. I mean, that's such a milestone moment that, you know, that we don't recognize until you do things like this and you bring it back to life and give it some legs to be appreciated. And, you know, we can't tell you enough, you know, how much we as football fans and historians appreciate hearing stories like this. And you do this quite a bit in your tidbits and in your books. And maybe you could tell folks where they can get a hold of some of this.
Sure. So, you know, best thing to do is just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. I publish a couple times a week, including, you know, linking, you know, our podcast. And, so, you know, if you subscribe, you'll get an email sent to you every time I publish a new story. You can also just bookmark it or follow on the Substack app. And, you know, it'll pop up in your little list of things to read. You know, I've also got links to my Amazon pages and whatnot, you know, through there if you're interested in book form. But, you know, just come and check it out whenever you want to.
Yeah, you know, and I want to make sure we have a little bit of time here. I want to mention something that you know, people may not be aware of. Now, you have the first book that I really came of yours about was How Football Became Football, and I think this, and I still tell people this all the time, I think this is the best written history of the game of football that I've ever seen. I've read, you know, hundreds of books on football history, but it's so complete and in detail. And you know, maybe just tell folks a little bit about that and where they can get that.
Sure. Well, thank you for the compliment. So, I mean, I basically sell it on primarily on Amazon. I'm going to start selling books on like eBay and probably, you know, some other forums, and people can reach out to me too directly to get a copy. I mean, it's basically just kind of covers the, I break the history of football into three different eras and kind of describe, using kind of a consistent chapter organization, you know, kind of how the rules evolved, how kind of broader conditions evolved, you know, social issues, stadiums in the fields, how those evolved, how the equipment evolved, you know, so, and just kind of marry up the, what was happening in each era, you know, on each of those different, you know, those different aspects of the game. So anyways, it's a fun read, you know, fairly lighthearted, but there is a lot of information in there.
Yeah. It definitely, it's a, I mean, if you really want to get the basics of how football evolved to what it is today, it's one I would recommend to do. You get the full gamut, and you know, you are you're not too conceited or too proud to know when, you know, you wrote that book, but 10, 15 years ago, probably now. I don't remember. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I think it was 2000 I published it. So yeah,
okay. It's 25 years ago. So you're constantly finding information. You're just like you talked about earlier here about, you know, the forward pass. You corrected that a couple of times through the first forward pass. And you talk about that not only in your tidbits, you talk about it here on this program. And I've heard you on other talks too, of, you know, telling things, because history is a dynamic thing. You know, as we learn more about it and, you know, have more information out there in the computer age, we're learning new things. And it's a great thing to always try to get the history right.
Yeah. Well, our episode 2 weeks from now, we'll cover a similar issue. I don't know if I need to update it or not, but we'll talk about it.
All right. Well, there's our tease. And, you know, but we have an episode next Tuesday too. And stay tuned for 2 weeks from now, when Tim will have this big reveal. Tim, we appreciate you joining us today, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Very good. Thanks, sir.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know that. Can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.